The Wednesday Week is sponsored by the Riverside Cafe, the perfect place for a pre-match pint.
Gentlemen, and a very warm welcome to the Atty New Who podcast. I'm Lord Hillsborough, and with me online, first of all, we have Mr. Marriott. Jamesy, your boy, how the chuff are you?
Is this the way it's going to go tonight?
Yeah, baby.
Is this going to be it? Because you know what? Mm. He's had a great couple of weeks. He's done brilliant, but it's now getting ruined by some people. I'm not going to mention any names here, but some people, just taking it a little bit too far. And ruining it for everyone.
I thought I was quite reserved over the last few weeks, considering what's happened. I've been sort of holding myself back. In fact, I think you'll find if you look at my Twitter feed for today, you won't see one Atty New tweet all day from my Twitter feed.
From your Twitter feed, yes. I wouldn't have got any from the TWW cast feed because I've unfollowed it. So, there we go.
Also on the line, we have Mr. Davies. Richie, how are you? How's it you?
I'm very well, but Lord. I'm also getting a little, sick and tired of the Atty posts pouring into our Facebook and Twitter feeds right now.
You're not forced to look at them. You realise that?
I'm an admin of the bloody page, Facebook page, so I get all the freaking notifications.
Yeah, there's been a few.
just one or two.
Also on the line this evening, he's back. This is 2 weeks in a row. He's like Forestieri.
Back from injury.
Eddie, oh boy, how's the show for you?
And then the righteous will shine forth as the sun in the kingdom of their father. He who has ears, let him hear. And if children, heirs also. Heirs of Atty and fellow heirs with Nuiu, if indeed we suffer with him, so that we also may be glorified with him. I've become a convert to the Church of Atty.
I don't think you're on your own there, Eddie Orbean. I think there's been a few that have seen the lights just recently.
We all have, though. We've all been converted, but
yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it's a bit like veganism, isn't it? When people become vegans, and bloody hell, don't they have to go around telling everyone for a while? All right, yeah. So we've all converted to the Church of Atty. Great, he's a striker, he's scoring goals. Good.
That's what he's paid to do.
I think you'll find some of us have been here for quite some time. Right, then, let's crack on. First of all,
we know.
No shit.
We shall speak about the Preston game, shall we? Because I think it's fair to say that we weren't terribly confident about this one, were we?
No. I mean, they were in really good form, and our pattern was win one and then lose for 2 months, I think, was the way that this season's generally been going. So we'd done the winning bit, and I think, yeah, we all kind of thought this is when... the wheels were going to come off again. And to be honest, actually, probably at half-time, it was still sort of following that pattern because I think Preston probably had the best of the first half. It wasn't a great first half of football. And it did kind of feel like we'd had a couple of chances, we'd not taken them. Maybe we were going to kind of pay the price for that. But, I mean, I didn't see what was coming. I didn't see that start to the second half. Crikey, that was just phenomenal.
Yeah, it's I'd looked at the team that was put out in the first half, and I thought there was almost a stunning lack of ambition there. I thought it was a team that was coming off a decent result, albeit with an international break, and I wanted it to be a little bit more adventurous, but Preston are a pretty decent team, and so I can understand the logic behind it. But as a first half, it was just diabolical football, wasn't it? I wonder whether we're at this point in the season now where teams are mentally giving up. You know, we're almost on the beach for some of these teams who aren't going to make it oh yeah, as the song goes, they're not going down and they're not going up. Does it make it easier for a team like Wednesday to take advantage of that, because teams are not really fighting tooth and nail? It certainly felt like first half we weren't very good, but Preston didn't offer anything to really worry us. And attacking towards the cop second half, we decided to take the game by the scruff of the neck.
You're probably right there. I think you're right in terms of the team selection wasn't inspiring, was it? It was like it felt like we decided to rest Zhao, and you're like, we've just had a 2-week international break. Yeah. You know, why do we need to do that? But then you also think, well, we're going into a period of, you know, 2 games in 3 days or whatever it was, 2 games in 4 days. So, you know, maybe he feels there are certain players that can't play kind of the full sort of 4 separate halves of football there. So maybe resting Zhao for half of it and bringing him on for the second half and seeing whether he changes the game might just be like, you know, maybe actually Jos is a tactical genius and he got it absolutely spot on. You know, we sort of rode out the first half and then second half went in for the kill and flipping well did it.
I think we were missing sort of 2 strikers up front though, weren't we, in that first half? I think it was pretty obvious.
I've got this thing now about before the game in a pub, like, please don't tell me the team, because it generally upsets me. But I think for the first time in a while, it didn't upset me, the team. But the first half, you're absolutely right, Lord H, that we were crying out for... Atty was coming deep to get the ball, and Reach was coming deeper. And for me, Atty should have been up front, and Reach should have been the one playing that number 10 role, which is not really, I don't think, his position. So it was crying out for 2 strikers all first half because it just wasn't working. But fair play that he changed it at half time and made sure we had got 2 strikers up front, and boy, did that change the game.
I think it was, we were almost hamstrung by Hutchison Bingo becoming the most ludicrous, the worst Hutchison Bingo of all time.
38 seconds, was it? Or something like that.
It was less than that. It was about 24 seconds or something, wasn't it?
He got booked while I was still singing the second verse of Hi Ho Sheffield Wednesday, which is uncommon even for him. But, you know, what that did was it almost made us sit even deeper, and we didn't have any kind of link in the first half, you know, between, you know, the back four and the more forward-looking players. And I honestly thought that by having Bannon back, we would really, you know, we'd have that license to go forward. That didn't really happen in the first half. And I think it all changed when Zhao came on. Obviously, Hutch's injury, I think at the time, it looked horrendous. I mean, he cried out when he was cropped. And I swear that I heard a crack, whether, it, you know, at the time, it didn't with his shin pad or bone or you know, anything else. But I feared the worst. He battled on, but Zhao coming on then kind of gave us that athleticism, that ability to stretch the play that we just didn't have in the first half. And it really made a difference. Whether that is Jos's tactical plan, I don't know. I don't know how the game would have developed if Hutch hadn't have been booked so early. But certainly it became a much more recognisable home performance, once that second half kicked off and Zhao was in the play.
Absolutely. And it was nice to see Hutch back for a bit, wasn't it? It was lovely. I thought it was having a lovely game. I mean, the splitting up, obviously we saw it in the Leeds game and against Preston. The way that it just breaks that play up in the middle when they're attacking was fantastic. It's just that they were attacking a lot because midfield were a bit iffy, weren't it? We didn't really have much oomph through it in the first half. But then the second half came and that was just lovely, wasn't it?
I think when you see at home, you shouldn't be playing 1 striker up front. I get 1 striker up front away from home, but at home you should be those 2 strikers up front, and that really turned the game. That just, you know, within minutes, didn't it, in the first half? Sorry, in the second half.
You say that, but I think we've kind of had 2 games in a row now, and we'll come on to the Sunderland game a little bit later, where we've almost just kind of sat back a little and weathered the storm. Now, granted, against Sunderland, it was with 2 strikers on the pitch, but we've kind of just sort of seen out the first half of 2 games before we then ramp it up a level, and it's really worked for us. Now, I don't know if I'm not saying it was necessarily deliberately like that on Friday against Preston. There'd be no logic to do it when you've just had, you know, 2 weeks off with an international break. But it does make me wonder whether or not Jos has just had a think about things and thought maybe actually, you know, having a fairly quieter first half, maybe just giving the opposition a chance to think, all right, okay, they're there for the taking, so that they go in and they do their team talk, and then we go in and say, right, okay, time to put the action plan into place, and this is when we go for it, and we hit them, and we hit them hard. Because it's kind of worked for the last two games, if that's been what the intention has been, which is why I kind of said maybe actually, you know, Jos is some kind of tactical genius, and he's just not had enough kind of personnel at his disposal to be able to cope with those kind of plans. Maybe it's just coincidence. It's just felt like two games have followed a similarish pattern now.
You look at the goals that we conceded, though, and I think every Wednesday fan will look at them and go, yeah, they're typical Wednesday goals to concede.
Yeah.
Because I don't think we have that discipline at the back to prevent those goals going in. So actually, it might be the perfect tactical plan where Jos just goes, oh, you know what? What we're going to do is shrink this game down to a 45-minute game, and then that's less time for our defence to get caught with a player in behind them, or get caught falling asleep, or get caught out of position. You know, because the goals we do concede are super typical Wednesday goals. We don't get out-muscled. You know, you don't see us conceding goals the likes, you know, when Nui scored against Leeds. When was the last time you saw Tom Leeds or Venancio get absolutely muscled off the ball and a player go past them? It literally is lapses in concentration, you know, where you know, one of our players seemingly sees a relative in the crowd and just thinks, I'm going to look at him for a bit. And then there's a player immediately behind him who just lashes the ball past Wildsmith. I absolutely... If Jos has seen that, then he has seen something. He's addressed a weakness in our team in a way that Carlos Cavalier would never have done.
Bugger all that. Let's talk about the goals. I'm chopping at the bit. For goodness sake.
I was just going to say, how are we going to do this? Because we've got altogether seven goals to talk about, and all of them are worthy of 10 minutes discussion on their own, really. So, I mean, we're already 10 minutes into the podcast. How are we going to do it?
One sentence challenge. You got it. Every one of our goals, we are limited to one sentence.
Wow. Okay, so there's four of us, right? Four goals for the Preston. So, News first goal. Let's go, Eddie.
Great first touch, classy finish.
Fair enough. Then the Zhao goal. Mr. Davies?
Fantastic cross from Bannon and great neck muscles for a looping header.
Great. I love his neck muscles. That's what I love about
it. I do enjoy a nice pair of neck muscles. James, it'll be the saviour's second goal. You can have the privilege of discussing.
Do you know what? Lord H, I mean, I've known you for a few years now. I don't feel like I can take this one off you, right? And I also... And I don't. I mean, it's up to Rich and Eddie whether or not they agree with this. I feel like we shouldn't limit you to one sentence. I think you should have.
I think you should have
60 seconds, right, to describe it, to talk about it, say whatever you want. You know, you can touch yourself in any places that you want to do while you're doing it. But then when your 60 seconds is up, then that's it.
I don't need
the 60 seconds. Sorry, before
you start, can I go to the toilet then? Just to sort of have to hear it again.
It was quite simply pass one, pass two, pass three, pass four, shoot,
spaff everywhere. Spaff.
It was thunder chotter.
Do you know what? It was superb.
Beautiful.
It was superb. And if I had to sum it up in a sentence, I wouldn't even need it. I can sum it up in a word. And it was the word that I think I repeated several times after that ball hit the back of the net. And that was just, wow. Just, you know, the last player on the pitch you'd expect to do it. The last point in the game that you'd expect someone to take that kind of risk and do that sort of thing. Just everything about it was just, wow. Awesome.
Keep it in the fucking corner of the goal screen.
He wanted to keep it in the corner and then accidentally went past two players before it then became a thing.
As he was stumbling.
Yeah, exactly. Amazing.
And, of course, the fourth goal. James, please.
Welcome back. That's the only words that I can use to describe it. Could you just imagine that any other time, right? Fernando Forestieri is out for pretty much that. It was August, wasn't he? The last time that he played for us, so he's pretty much been out all season, give or take. And he comes back, and let's be fair, he had a really good period of play while he was on the pitch. You know, I thought he had some really good touches. He looked really hungry. He scores a fantastic goal, and yet no one's been talking about him. It's almost like that's secondary. And he's not even guaranteed a name on the team sheet, is he, at the moment? Because the way that Zhao and Niuyu have been playing. So he's spent this last kind of 6 months or whatever sat there thinking, they're all waiting for me to come back. Just wait till I get back on that pitch. And then he comes back, he does that, and still it's like, no, you're all right, Fessy. You just sit on the bench.
So he kissed the badge.
And did a dance.
I know when you kiss the badge, it's rubbish, and modern players do it, and then they get transferred the next week or whatever. But he's been out for so long and everything's been bad. And then he came back and he kissed the badge and he looked happy. And when he looked at Atty, he looked at him like he loved him, like the big brother he is. Oh, and it's just everything is right in the world again, isn't it?
And we're all vain enough to take that for this week. Next week might be different.
100%.
Tell you what, though, did you know there's kind of chatter with some of the interviews that the players have had and stuff about how the team spirit's quite strong at the moment, and I think that there was very clear suggestions that the back end of the Carlos era, in fact, maybe actually pretty much since the summer, that things have been a bit down and the team spirit's not been good and there's been quite a bit of infighting and stuff like that. Do you get the feeling at the moment that there is a bit of a positive feel about the place and that the players are genuinely seem to be playing for each other now?
My favourite bit is that Daniel Pudil is now fully 4 or 5 seconds behind everybody else in the team to join in the goal celebrations. Because we're scoring goals and he's so far behind the play that he like randomly turns up about 10 seconds after when everyone's there. Yeah, the fact is that we're celebrating as a unit again. It's not individual players.
Yeah, I noticed that.
It's not even the celebrations. It's the lack of recriminations now. You know, when we score, the towards the end of Carlos's time, or let's just be honest here, this season, it's not been great. When we've conceded, the body language hasn't been great. Yeah. And there's been a lot of anger there. There's been a lot of recrimination. And that seems to have gone as well. I don't know whether we've got the team spirit back like we had, but we've talked about leadership. We're getting our leaders back, aren't we? You know, Niuyu's always there, but now he's getting a chance and he's scoring amazing goals regularly. Barry Bannon's back, Sam Hutchison's back, Tom Lees is back. It feels like it's order's reasserting itself.
All you need to look at is the players' Instagrams and the videos are putting out. It's brilliant to see. I don't know if you guys saw it, probably not. If you won't follow the Chuffing podcast Twitter account, you bunch of numpties. But there was Zhao and Pelopessi on the coach singing, and Bannon and Atty on the coach singing, and it just feels lovely again, doesn't it?
I think what Edis is right is like you see them celebrating, and apart from Wildsmith, who's kind of 100 yards down the other end of the pitch, all 10 the rest of the players plus the subs as well are piling onto it. So that's for me is a really good kind of sign. And we've had these players out injured for ages, and pretty much what we said was that as soon as some of these players come back, it might change a bit, because the players that have been playing have not been good enough, that's without a doubt. But the ones that were out injured, quite clearly good enough, and now it's proving it. Now Bannon's back, now Forestieri's back, we're seeing these kind of the results starting to change a little bit.
So just quickly, just to finish off the Preston match then, just one word, your favourite goal of that game. So, Eddie.
That's not even a question.
What was your favourite goal?
It's a non-question. Because we're all going to get the same answer, aren't we?
Yeah, obviously. But
answer the question.
I will, but I'm not going to do it in one word. You're not even my real dad. You can't tell me what to do. I'll make one observation very quickly. Niuyu's goal felt to me like the goal that Antonio scored against who? Right.
Wickham.
No, not against Wickham. Before Wickham. That, against Carlisle.
Carlisle. Sorry. Yeah.
Injury time. Mikel Antonio curled that one in. Against Carlisle, and it was like all of the pain was washed away. It was a goal that wiped the slate clean, and that's what that new year goal felt.
Rich.
What do you want me to say apart from New You? I mean, what?
I'm asking a question. What's with your hostility this evening from you?
Because you want us to spaff all over the place.
No,
about
because I think
you are obsessed with.
Just answer the damn question.
Bang the table then. New You.
Thank you. James?
It's hard to say anything other than New You second. However, I think it does deserve an honourable mention for many things to do with the Zhao goal, that lovely kind of triangular passage of play between whoever it was, Bannon, Fox, a couple of other players, really beautiful little bit of play, and then the Bannon ball into the middle, and also the fact that in terms of actually heading getting the ball into the back of the net using your head that far out when the ball is looping in from that angle is a really hard thing to do, and it sort of reminded me a little bit of the who was it? Robin van Persie goal in the
World Cup,
the Euros. That was a level above, but technique wise, it's really hard to do that. That wasn't really one word, was it? But I think honourable mention for Zhao. On another day, we would have spent the last 20 minutes talking about that goal.
Yeah, well, I'm going to disagree with you because I think the Zhao goal was the better goal of the day.
Oh, well, I just really stole your thunder there, didn't I?
You've spent the last 48 hours just spamming the internet with asking you videos of that goal, and then you absolutely bait and switch us with this.
The Zhao goal is better. That was the better technical goal. As you say, the cross from the ball from Bannon was perfect. The header from Zhao was incredible, and it was a far harder technique than Newhoof's goal. Right then, chap. So let's crack on to the Sunderland match. Now, we were a little bit more upbeat originally about playing Sunderland, weren't we? Obviously, they've been awful, and I think we could see why, couldn't we?
I was, before the game and during the game both, I was cursing Eddie because what was your line in the last podcast, Eddie, that the most Sheffield Wednesday thing possible would be for us to smash Preston and then go to Sunderland and lose. And there were various points during the first half where I think me and my mate John just looked at each other and just went, we're going to lose this game. We are going to lose this game. And it wasn't that Sunderland were particularly anything. It just felt like we were just giving them a lot of chances, particularly in the first half. We were just letting them do a lot of stuff. Thankfully for us, they are absolutely fucking shite. I mean, they are dreadful, aren't they? They've just got nothing. I mean, they've gone to Derby and won 4-1 on Friday, and they played with a team with no confidence, with no ideas, with, just very little in midfield, very little in attack, and actually very little in defence. Just a really, really poor team. And it was kind of the same thing again, wasn't it? Where first half, we just kind of let them come at us a little bit without really doing very much. And second half, when we thought, all right, let's step it up a level and just pick them off. God, they're such a bad team. Such a bad team. And I really feel for them because they're a good club, Sunderland. It's a really nice setup there. I think the fans are really nice. I had a really good day out there. I thought the police were really helpful. We got lost a couple of times trying to find the metro afterwards, and the fans couldn't have been more helpful after they basically got relegated on Monday. And just really nice, and I really feel for them. But they're just so poor, so poor.
It is disappointing, I think, that clubs like that are kind of that look from the outside look like good clubs. Well run, maybe not so much that now, but clubs that you kind of if you're going to pick the clubs you want in the top league, they would be among that because of the support they've got, the infrastructure, everything they've got about it. They're a good club, and not like a franchise FC or anything like that. Do you know what I mean? So to see them kind of just about to go to League One is quite disappointing, really. But I think before the match, I was looking at it and thinking, right, they just tonked Derby 4-1. You could just see it all day long. This is Wednesday. Exactly like Eddie said. Yeah, we'll smash Preston, but we're going to just fuck up. We just don't like. But so to get to 1-1, and obviously I wasn't there, but so I can't comment to watch any game, but to see it get to 1-1, and you're thinking, oh, my God, here we go. But, yeah, I was pleasantly surprised in the end.
And it should have been here we go, because they should, in their position in the league, when they concede and then equalise within basically what, less than 2 minutes, that should have been the point where they go, right, guys, seriously, get your shit together. We're in a relegation battle. We can go on and win this game. And for them to concede the goal that Tom Lees scored, which was, of all the goals that we've scored, the seven that we've scored over the Easter weekend, that was the least impressive, wasn't it? You know, it was just a free kick into the box and just really bad defending. And Tom Lees basically just connected with the ball and it was going to go in the back of the net. So they've only got themselves to blame for that, the fact that they get it back to 1-1. And yet there was a bit of luck involved, and I'm sure we'll talk about, you know, some of the controversy of that second half. But you can't concede goals like that and then, you know, feel sorry for yourselves when you lose the game, can you?
I think we know from, you know, from the disappointment of this season, let, you know, call it what it is, disappointment of this season, that even when Wednesday have been down at home, when we've got that goal, that, you know, that kind of motivator, even if it is just, it's getting back to 1-1 or it's getting, you know, from 2-0 down back to 2-1, the crowd really genuinely give the team a lift. You know, a lot of the time, I think we feel that we're really cynical as fans, and the Wednesday fans are really demanding, and, you know, they accept nothing less than, you know, the John Sheridan and Chris Waddle level play. But you really saw the difference that when Sunderland got back into that game completely out of the blue. I mean, it wouldn't have happened if they hadn't had that injury after we'd scored and we were just caught completely cold at it. You know, again, a typical Wednesday goal to concede. But although the Sunderland home fans kind of went up and they started singing, it didn't really have that gravity that's really going to motivate the team to then go to the next level. And we actually responded. We were the stronger to respond to that. And so it wasn't a surprise when, you know, when we got a goal. I think, as James says, that I would be so disappointed if I'd conceded that goal, because it wasn't as if it was a really well-worked, clever, you know, Tom Lees was left free because other players ran across their markers and drew them. It was just really bad defending, nobody taking responsibility for it. And I think if you watch the YouTube highlights, Rob Statton is giving it all, header, powerful header from Tom Lees. And, you know, he got in front of his mark. No, it wasn't. It was literally landed on his instep and he couldn't do anything else other than put it in. So I think we got a bit of a let off to get back ahead, but I think we deserved it by that point. We were dominant and they didn't make it an intimidating atmosphere when they got back into the game. And I think that paved the way for us to then just go on and run away with it.
Absolutely. Fantastic. I mean, the game itself, obviously the first half was absolutely horrendous, wasn't it? It was just dire football.
The conditions didn't help. Let's be honest. The conditions were pretty grim. Yeah. It was cold and wet and windy.
It was just horrendous.
Can we just dwell on that for a minute? Because I think it was 7:45 in the morning that me and John set off. We had to walk into town because couldn't get a taxi, no buses, because the amount of... Was that snow even forecast? Like, when we got up, we were like,
yes,
what What the hell has happened?
Yeah, you said it was going to happen, yeah.
Yeah.
I think it forecast early in the week, and then it changed to kind of rain, and then it was just going to be sleet. But it was proper snow. But it was only in Sheffield. Like, as soon as the train, even when the train got to Doncaster, there didn't seem to be any snow there. And then certainly in the northeast, just absolutely nothing. But I've never known a place rain as much. It rained from the minute we got there to the minute that we left. It just rained all day.
Oh, absolutely. It was a horrendous day. I would like to just a little shout out to the Dutch Owls Twitter feed, who kept me entertained that first half. I was translating their tweets really badly, so that was fun. And Twitter wasn't working properly, so I was putting out these hilarious quips and nobody was responding at all.
Obviously hilarious, yeah.
But it turns out Twitter wasn't working, so that's what I'm blaming it on. Yeah, so, I mean, the game itself, obviously, away it went. And eventually, we came secure, shall we say. Because I must admit, I was still nervy at one apiece. Were you guys?
Yeah, I was.
Even at 2-1. Even at 2-1.
But luckily...
Are we going to talk about the incident that, you know, the game could have turned on?
What, when Fox went off?
That was the game changer. No, but at 2-1, yeah. I mean, I'm sure we've all watched it back several times. And as I've had a couple of mates that disagree, because I've said all the way along, I said at the time, that looked a Stonewall penalty. Watched it back on the TV several times. For me, just absolute 100% penalty. But I've had a couple of mates that disagreed that say that he was already on his way down. Yeah. It'd be interesting to see what you think. Because if he gives the penalty, he's got to give Bannon a yellow, which means he's going off because he's already on
yellow. He's going off, exactly.
So 2-2 and we're down to 10 men. That really is the point whereby their tails are going to be up, isn't it?
I thought it was a dive.
There's no way it's a dive.
If you look at how he goes down, he's halfway down before Bannon actually touches him, and then he sort of flops himself. I mean, I didn't actually think that there was any controversy over that until I watched it back on the telly, and Mr. Morrison, good old Clint, came on and said it's a definite penalty, and I was screaming at the telly saying, what on earth are you talking about, you stupid man?
When you watch Channel 5, because, you know, us in the Channel 5 circles, we don't take much notice of Clint Morrison. You know, he's kind of like, you know, he's sort of the in-joke.
Clint,
no one really takes
Clint
him seriously.
Now, is he? Instead of Clinton?
Yeah, yeah. Go, Clint.
Oh, it's just Clint to you, is it? Are you good mates now? Best mates now? Channel 5 buddies. Regardless whether it was or it wasn't, I think we've turned the corner with a look like that. You know, season long, that's kind of stuff been going against us. To actually get a decision like that in our favour makes a bloody change.
Yeah, I won't disagree with it. At the time watching it, I thought, I spoke to all the lads around me and I said, that's a bloody let off because it looked like a lunge. But from that distance, from the away end, you think, you know what, the ref's obviously seen something that we haven't. Fine, we'll take it. No problem. Happy days. When you see it, I mean, it looks terrible. I honestly think it's a really bad decision from either the referee or the linesman to not give it. Because I borrow a phrase from American sports when they talk about a player making a football move, i.e. he's not going to ground, he's going to lunge past the player to try and avoid the challenge that's coming in. And Bannon just clears him out. So, yeah, what a massive let-off. But I think on the balance of play, it wouldn't have been justified. Because I think second half, we were vastly better than them. And it goes from, you know, like I said about their crowd. I don't think their coaching squad, their coaching team believe in those players. I don't think the players believe in themselves. They were just waiting for the axe to fall. And, it was up to us to do it. So, yeah, I've got no sympathy for them. And even their fans didn't really go up and, like, it wasn't booing afterwards for Bannon. It wasn't like they were like, we've been robbed here. I just think when you look at it back, it was a terrible, terrible decision.
I appreciate your opinion, but you're wrong.
Whether you're celebrating a birthday, a wedding or anniversary, maybe you've passed your driving test, or you've landed a new job. Well, whatever your reason for a party, the Riverside Cafe is the perfect location on Catchbar Lane overlooking Hillsborough Stadium. To inquire about hiring us for your function, call 07989 856 054 or 0114 232 6121.
Right then, ladies and gents, let's crack on, shall we, with this week's Wednesday news. First things first, we have got an injury update. James, we've got another one on the injury list and a few that aren't coming back.
We've got some bad news. So Sam Hutchinson is now out for the season. I mean, it's probably not a great surprise, but and Gary Hooper confirmed out for the season. But some good news on the injury front, which is that Morgan Fox is also out for the season. So. There we go.
Oh, that's not nice. Wishing pain and suffering on somebody, James.
I'm not wishing pain and suffering on him. Just you know, anything to get him off the football pitch.
How much pain and suffering has Morgan Fox put on us for the last few months?
last couple of games, didn't really, but certainly against Preston. He wasn't bad, yeah. Actually. He seemed he seems to be one of those that maybe when he's actually got some confidence, he might be all right. But
one of the things I wanted to talk about was we're getting the quote unquote first team players back, you know, our better players. How much they are making players who we've probably been a bit harsh on this season look a hell of a lot better. You know, Joey Pelupessi against Sunderland looked like a legitimate baller. I thought he was close to man of the match territory on Monday. I don't know whether you agree.
But has he come through that period of where he's kind of been new to the club and he's now starting to settle down a little bit? Is that part of it? And like you say, getting better players back around him, so the pressure's not all on him.
Exactly. Exactly.
I don't know, but can you judge it against Sunderland?
Because I think we've established,
they are really, really poor.
This is why I've not been doing Joey Pelupessi videos all day on our socials. But hey, I tell you what, I give it one more game. If he continues to do that, I'll be there. I'll be finding every kind of Pelupessi rhyming slang to get into video stuff.
What does rhyme with Pelupessi? Lionel Messi. Lionel Messi rhymes with Pelupessi. There we go.
Of course, with it being so close to the end of the season, any injury now is going to be essentially people out for the rest of the season, isn't it? It's as simple as that. I always found
it weird that thing. He's out for the season. Well, he's out for about 6 games or whatever it is left now. It just seems weird when they said the end of this. They're out for the season. Well, and even with 1 game to go,
tell me what's factually
the
incorrect about that statement.
There's nothing. It just sounds weird. That's all I'm saying.
No, it does. I mean, it's 6 games, isn't it? It's about 5 weeks or...
It's a
month out. And it's not... I mean, Hooper is no surprise. I don't think we expected to see Hooper again before the end of the season anyway. So that's no surprise. Hutch, the only surprise actually is that it's a different injury with Hutch, which I don't think we saw coming. I think that we all just assumed it would just be a recurrence of his old knees or lack thereof. And Fox looked fairly innocuous. The Fox thing, I didn't really notice what happened. Often when players go off in what seems to be quite innocuous circumstances, it does seem to kind of end up being something that's going to take a little while to sort out. I think the good thing is now. I mean, two things. Firstly, and I'm sure this is something we're going to talk about in a little bit more depth, but you look at the league table and you sort of think it's difficult to see a scenario now where we're going to get dragged into it. So, you know, losing another player or two for what remains of the season isn't the end of the world. And we've also now got this kind of scenario starting to come round with regards to Adam Reach now and exactly, you know, where he's been playing a much more central position because we've bloody well needed him. But now we've got a few more players coming back, we've got a few more options. You start looking towards that left wing back role and thinking, well, that's what we signed him as. We signed him as a left-sided player, as a winger effectively, who played probably more at left back than he's played at left wing for us, certainly in that first season. So surely that position should really be his. So whether it gives us an opportunity for a few games for the back end of the season to see whether or not, you know, Reach can work in that position again now, that might be quite interesting to see.
Absolutely. I believe we've got a few updates on the youth as well, haven't we?
No, well, we've got one.
We've got an update on the youth.
You've got to do it with the proper intro.
Oh, yeah, we had a jingle, didn't we? Yeah. We had a jingle and we'll say, James talks about kids. I forgot what the original one was, and that one just was,
definitely
was
wrong completely.
Yeah, really wrong. Yeah, yeah, it was just like, I don't think there was a jingle. It was sort of like, youth update, youth.
Yeah, youth and stuff. Anyway, you crack on.
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised if anyone knows that this exists, but in football, they have an apprentice of the season sort of thing. So the EFL have a shortlist of three players who are, like, you know, apprentices at their club. I assume they get more than the normal apprenticeship wage, which is about £1 a day. So
they have to be professionals, if I understand it correctly. So they have to have signed a professional contract as opposed to just be academy scholars.
Right, fair enough. Anyway, so of the three that have been nominated for apprentice of the season, Alex Hunt, who plays for us, is one of them. Now, you may remember Alex Hunt for winning the Academy Goal of the Month competition a couple of months back for his, you know, absolute worldly strike. So he's not had a bad season, Alex Hunt. And I'm guessing the fact that he's, you know, he's nominated for Apprentice of the Season means that he's probably about 14. So, you know, it all looks pretty rosy.
Looking at the pictures of him, he does look about 14 as well.
There we go.
Actually 17.
Oh, is he? He's still, record. Yeah, he's not had a bad season for a 17-year-old. And, you know, I think that some very good indications there about what this kid might be capable of. And that's all I've got for the youth update, I'm afraid.
He's not, I mean, he's in quite illustrious company, isn't he? He's got,
yeah, that's what I thought.
Up against Fulham's Ryan Sessegnon and Reading's Danny Loader. So against Sessegnon, that's not a bad one to be. He's probably not going to win it based on
he's
that.
He's been a first teamer for over a year now, hasn't he?
Both of those have played extensively for their clubs. So it's, well, in a sense, it's like he's just turning up for you know, for the free beer. Not for the free beer because he's only 17. Turn up for the free Diet Coke and what, J2Os and Fruit Shoots. But yeah, he's probably not going to win it. But hey, how amazing is that then? For a lad who's had zero first team experience to be rubbing shoulders with you know, players who have been, you know, key contributors to a team at the top of the league and a team that are even worse than us. But even so.
And I guess because he's under 18, they've got to kick him out about 9 o'clock as well. You can't stop beyond that.
I really want to know how this works. So it's Apprentice of the Season. So Ryan Sessegnon is an apprentice, because if it's anything like, so the apprentices that we have at our place, once every probably 3 weeks, this, you know, slightly overweight woman from Doncaster College comes and they have to do like some numbers sums and work out like what the circumference of a circle is.
Numbers
all these kind of like, you know, key skills things as part of their apprenticeship. And then they have to do like, you know, 100 words on what your favourite show on the TV last week was and that kind of stuff. Like, you know, do they have to do that kind of stuff? Is it like a proper apprenticeship like that? Do they have to do like a day in college every month?
Yeah, I think you have to be, yeah, still be in the academy system. You know, full disclosure here. So one of Alex Hunt's main rivals in local games has been a young lad called Alfie McCalmon, who plays the same position for the Leeds Academy. And he's in exactly the same situation as Alex Hunt. So he signed a pro contract for Leeds, but he still has to do, you know, the kind of 2 hours a day of English and maths and all that kind of stuff. You know, they have that duty of care in the academy. And yet he is earning more money than probably any of us for this podcast.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, even the big bucks that Lord Hillsborough pays us for this podcast. So yeah, I think you still have to be part of the system. You can't be Billy Big Bollocks around this. I'd just be amazed if Ryan Sessegnon is still just rocking up. You're going, oh, yeah, and scored at the weekend. Yeah, no, you need to calculate the circumference of a circle with 3 centimetre radius.
You've got to read Of Mice and Men for your essay for the end of this week.
If their footballing career does go askew, then they might have to enter the job market, and number sums is a wonderful skill to have, isn't it? So fair play to those chaps. Other little bit of Wednesday news, of course, the saviour of Sheffield Wednesday, Atty Niuhu, has won the Player of the Month award. I assume everybody on the podcast voted for Atty.
I missed the vote, so I didn't vote for anybody.
We didn't need you anyway, James.
I've got to say, I didn't vote either. If I had voted, I would have voted. I would have voted for.
I would have voted
because
for
he did deserve it. He did deserve it, and I think he wanted to get 85% of the vote, something like that, which was more than I think I joked last week that it would be like 70-odd percent, and the player in second will have got 8%. But it was even higher than that. But I mean, you can't argue with it. I mean, the guy's on absolute fire. Well done to him, and richly deserved.
I also upvoted a video on Pornhub entitled Kosovan Fucks Four Guys from Preston. So I think that probably counted towards it.
Yeah.
I don't know what that website is. I don't understand the joke, I'm afraid, Eddie. Lost me with that one.
was also loving the random picture of Atty being presented with this picture on the website with the guy.
Awkward does he look?
Hell is that? With his Lacoste hat on.
So have we figured out yet who that guy is?
Not at all. It doesn't even say, on the website.
I mean, my best guess would be that it's whoever is Atty's player sponsor
for this season.
But you know when they announce the teams before the game and it shows a picture of them on the big screen, and afterwards it has whoever they're sponsored by. And I think probably out of the squad of 18, 16 of them are available to sponsor because it costs that much now. It is basically have to take out a mortgage to sponsor one of our players. So I think Lucas Xiao is sponsored by the Blunkett family. And there's one other player that's sponsored in pretty much the entire opening squad. I can't imagine that Atty knew he was sponsored.
I think Barry Bannon, that's about it.
I believe it was the dinner tonight for the sponsors. So there's two tables set, one for the players, one for the sponsors.
No, it's true. It's taking place in my front room right now. The sponsors are all crammed in there. Yeah.
So I'm sure he looks like a guy who is big into the world of football. He knows about Wednesday. He listens to the Wednesday Week podcast. He knows what he's talking about. if you're listening and you are Atty Nuyiu's official sponsor and also sponsored by Lacoste, get in touch at TWWcast on Twitter.
I think you're being very disrespectful to the chap. I should imagine that he was picked out of thousands of people who queued outside Hillsborough to meet Atty and shake the saviour's hand. So well done, that man. Well done. Of course, I had a bit of Adam Reach news as well.
Yeah, so he's now in the final five for the EFL goal of the season. And anyone that watched the Good Friday show on Channel 5 will have seen them all. So they started off with a shortlist of 10, and then you could vote for the one you thought was best. Narrows it down to a shortlist of 5, which reaches in. I mean, obviously, it's been a public vote thing, so we obviously get through to the final 5. There's some bloody cracking goals in the top 10. So he has done really, really, really well. And the exciting thing is that now, because I think the winner is decided by a panel and it's announced at the EFL Awards, which I assume means that Adam Reach will get an invite to go. So he'll have to buy a suit and stuff like that now. But, free dinner and all that.
Do you chaps have any other Wednesday news for this week?
A couple of things that I was going to mention. Three things, actually, that I was going to mention. Firstly, obviously, we've had the figures come out this week about the amount that each club has spent on agents' fees in the last year. And I think we came in at something like 1.6, 1.7 million, which is barely even in the top half, to be fair, in terms of what some clubs have spent. I think Villa was £5.5 million,
wasn't it? Yeah.
Just on agents' fees. Now, I'm glad that this has come up towards the end of the podcast because I can't go on a half-hour rant about agents and how much I hate them and how much they are ruining the game and how they epitomise everything that is wrong in British football right now. But maybe I've said enough just in that little bit. So, yeah, that's there. This is a slight aside here, but anything when I get on to kind of talking about Wednesday and financial matters and stuff, I want to mention Peter Lohman, who is, you know, a friend of the podcast. He was on it a few weeks back. He's been involved in the finance. Well, he's led the financial fair play specials that we've done, and he's in Sheffield this weekend. So he's going to be at the game on Saturday. So I'm hopefully going to call him before the game in the Riverside Cafe to do a quick kind of periscope before the game with, and hopefully have a bit of a chat about what he thinks about agents' fees and stuff like that, because he's a good guy to talk to about financial stuff when it comes to football. What else was I going to mention? All the shirts are half price. I don't like any of them, so I'm not going to buy them, but you know, it's nice of the club to actually do this, considering last season, I think we made it to past Christmas before last season's shirts got reduced. So, you know, that's something. And what was the other thing that I was going to say is, no, it's gone, but it'll come back to me in a bit.
was it gin night at the Hillsborough Tap?
The Lord H made when we were sat in there recording a podcast and he kept calling it by the wrong name.
sorry, I've drunk a lot of gin.
Well, I didn't realise that Peter was coming over. That's rather exciting, that, James. He certainly knows his number, doesn't he, Peter? So I shall be looking forward to that periscope. That'd be marvellous. Right then, chaps.
I've got a couple of things. Firstly, just wanted to say Fred Spikesley for no other reason than just to wind Vic up. And I think we should do a separate podcast on it completely.
To be honest, would like to have a little look at that, do go and look that up. Mr. There's a chap, I'm sure everybody's seen it, but we've retweeted it from the TWCast various times. And they're now trying to raise money for a documentary on Fred Spikesley as well. So do have a little nose into that as well. Vic is supporting this movement.
Yeah, she's obviously lost the ability to go and block something or, you know, stop following it. Or don't look, something like that.
You guys could take some of your own advice there and do that with the wonderful social media content that we've been placing out from our joint podcast accounts. So, yeah. Fantastic. Right, so, chaps, let's crack on with the wonderful previews now. Next game up, of course, is Fulham, and this one is going to be a very difficult one because these chaps do have something to fight about. Obviously, Eddie mentioned earlier, teams that are maybe a bit on the beach. Obviously, Preston were sort of still pushing for playoffs, et cetera, et cetera. But Fulham are really in the thick of it now, aren't they?
It is one of those... you look at it and just think it's quite hard to see us get anything out of this one. They are there aren't many good teams in the league this year. You've got probably Villa, you've got Fulham, you've got Ipswich, you've got Cardiff, and you've got Wolves. Ipswich are great, aren't they? Ipswich are really good. But you've got pretty much that top four are actually the only teams that have got any sort of consistency about them or anything like that. I can't say I'm particularly looking forward to this. The good thing is that it almost doesn't really matter anymore. I think the fact that we've got those two those three wins over the last three games, those 9 points that have just made such a massive difference, means that we don't particularly need to panic about it. I think that, yeah, they'll come here really wanting to, they'll want to prove a point, what they want to do is over.
I've got a feeling we're going to approach this in quite a relaxed manner. I think with the players who you expect to be able to perform, there's no real pressure on them. It wouldn't surprise me at all. We could obviously get beaten quite handily. They're a very, very good team. It wouldn't surprise me if we pulled out a performance that was reminiscent of last season, the season before, where a kind of a big game. You imagine we're both fighting for prominence at the top of the division. I honestly think that we've got a really good chance. I'm not scared of Fulham. I think they're a very good team, but I think that we are a different proposition than we were even maybe a month ago.
Oh, absolutely. And as you say, there's very little pressure on us as a club now, and obviously Fulham, I should imagine, will probably be feeling it as well. So, yeah, lovely, lovely news. And then after that, a club in a very sort of similar situation to us is QPR, who had a cracking result against Norwich, didn't they?
I missed that. Did they beat Norwich?
They stuffed them 4-1.
Oh, really?
Absolutely.
It's a good scoreline, that 4-1. There's been a lot of good 4-1 results of late, hasn't there? Yeah, QPR are a weird club because I don't know what it is about them that I just don't like. I don't know if it's that they have real aspirations to be like one of the top London clubs. Like, whether do they just think they're better than they actually are, or is it the amount of money they've thrown at their project and just pissed up the wall? On the other hand, though, I do quite like Ian Holloway. And I think a lot of Wednesday fans have got a fair bit of time for him because he seems to actually be one of the few football analysts that is quite complimentary about us and doesn't just dismiss us in a heartbeat. So ex-football analyst is probably the correct terminology now.
We met him after the playoff final.
Yeah, he did, didn't you?
Outside Wembley. And yeah, we had a real good chat with him. David Grillo brought him up. Had a real good chat with him, and he just was really honest about how he thought what let us down. Proper nice bloke. Really had time for us, which was nice.
Absolutely. Having said all that, I really hope that we go there and win. I really do. And we won there last season, didn't we? We've got a decent record there of late.
Absolutely. Right then, chaps. So that's going to bring us to an end of this week's proceedings. Before we go, do you chaps have any little bits for tonight?
Yeah, just one thing that I was going to mention, which is just following on from last week's podcast, which obviously, you know, we did something a little bit different last week, which was obviously with me chatting with Barry. What I wanted to say was just, I mean, we did get quite a fair bit of feedback from that, from kind of different sides of the equation, really. I just want to say thank you to everyone that took the time to get in touch, whether they were positive or negative comments, and to be fair, I think there was a good mix of both. People that listened to it and enjoyed it, people that listened to it and didn't enjoy it, people that just decided that it wasn't going to be for them. I was involved in some really interesting discussions on Twitter last week, and some, you know, very mature, very grown up, some very adult conversations that kind of came off the back of that. And yeah, I just want to say thank you to everyone that actually took the time to get in touch and let me know what they think, because there were some really interesting comments off the back of that.
Absolutely. Well said, Jay. Well said indeed. Anybody else in a little bit for this evening?
Yeah, I just want to quick mention something that's not necessarily Wednesday linked, but obviously today on Wednesday, Ray Wilkins obviously passed away, which was it was really sad. I think we've had a troll through earlier and found a goal that he scored against Wednesday at Loftus Road for QPR, which was a bit of a nice little chip over Chris Woods back in 91. But just what a football's good guys, and probably a footballer, a football man, he could probably deserves the title legend, which is often used too much these days. But I think Ray Wilkins is the kind of guy that probably deserved it. And one of my memories was playing for England back in which World Cup was it when he got sent off?
86,
where yeah, Brian Robson did his shoulder, and then Wilkins got sent off when England had a nightmare start to the World Cup.
He threw the ball at the ref, didn't he?
He did, didn't he? Did, yeah, absolutely, yeah, he did. So, but you know, one of football's good guys, and you know, only 61, which is really, really sad, to be fair.
I think he's one of those players or football personalities that. Sorry, I know, you know, you and me, Richard, the elder statesman around here, but I remember him as a player. I think that you, even listeners who are younger than us will remember him. He was always on Football Italia in the 90s, Gazzetta Football Italia, and you know, helping out James Richardson in that, and then later on, you know, as a coach with Chelsea. He's been around the game for a long, long time. I think if you didn't see him play, he was a fantastic player. He was the consummate midfielder. He was box to box. He was everything you'd want in a player. It's really sad that he's gone at such an early age. Although it's not directly connected to our club, I think the football world is poorer for not having Ray Wilkins in it. So, commiserations and all our thoughts with his family.
There was one tweet I saw in particular today that really summed it up, I think, and it was from Jack Grealish at Villa. And I think Ray Wilkins was there as a coach or assistant manager, something like that at one point. And he basically said, even when Ray left Villa, he was always ringing me, offering advice and telling me what I could do to improve. A true gentleman, one of the most nicest guys I've ever met, which just, you know, probably sums him up, you know, for a young kid playing for a football club that really that he helped even when he wasn't at that football club.
Proper slaphead, though, yeah?
He was. <it's...
laughs> I do remember that. I think it was my first or second full season following Wednesday when he did score that beautiful chip over Chris Woods. And remarkably, even then, you know, he looked like he was in his 40s back then. He just had that sort of look about him, didn't he? I don't know how he managed to do it, but it was just a beautiful, beautiful goal.
Absolutely. I would like to say thank you as well to Steve at Steel 1867 for sending us that goal as well. So thanks for that, Steve. Right then, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to bring us to an end of this week's show. Mr. Davies, if people would like to find you over there on the Twitterage, where can we do that? Oh boy.
You can find me at Dickie Owl on Twitter, Instagram, wherever else you find. I'm that Dickie Owl.
And Eddie Hobbean, where can we find you?
So I am, as always, on Twitter, Insta, all that kind of stuff, at Sausage Arms. And for a limited time only, starting this Saturday, I will be in Dubai, where I'll be spending a week, and therefore not on next week's podcast.
Hey. Oh, you're not doing a hat trick.
The streak ends with two. There we go.
This is like Sam Hutchinson, isn't it? Back for two games, out for the rest of the season.
Misses the next six games.
Yeah.
I'd like to think of myself more like Morgan Fox. A bit rubbish and out. And everyone's like, okay, thank God.
For you. James, oh boy, where can people find you over there on the social medias?
Well, on Twitter, at James Barrier. I don't really use Instagram, so I wouldn't bother trying to look me up for that. As I mentioned earlier, and I've not asked him about it, but I'm assuming that he'll be cool about doing this. So, yeah, we'll be meeting Peter on Saturday. So hopefully we'll do a Periscope or a Twitter Live, I think it's called now, video from the pub before the game. So, yeah, drop me a follow at James Marriott. And then I'm off to Peddler Night Market after that. So I might even Periscope from that when I'm absolutely hammered. And that'll be very amusing for everyone.
Absolutely. Of course, if you'd like to get on me over there on the Twitter, you can do that, Lord H. That's L0RD_H. Get on the podcast at TWWcast. We have been trying to do more on the social media. You might have seen our...
No shit.
Do more, but not necessarily more variety.
Yes. Let's have a little bit of variety, yes.
You might have noticed, if you are a Facebook user, that our Facebook presence has increased slightly. We've even been putting stuff out there on Instagram as well. So if you are followers of those sorts of things, or if you are finding us for the first time because somebody's been doing a wonderful job over the last week over there on our Facebook page, by all means, thank you for coming, and please do stick with us. Remember, Eddie's going away, so he won't be here next week. It's fine. Of course, you guys over there on the YouTubes as well. It has been a pleasure, as always, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so, so much for joining us. Be good, be safe, and we shall see you real soon.
Saw Ray Wilkins sign off the old year with one of the best goals of his professional career. Dennis Bailey's muscular running set up the chance. Wilkins showed supreme footballing vision to flight home a perfect lob.
Bailey on the charge. There was a moment's hesitation from Woods. It's rolled back to Wilkins. Oh, that's a supreme finish from Ray Wilkins. Delightful goal. You pay good money to see goals like that. Look how far out he was. And he says, football is as simple as that.